Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. A listener asked, could we get a mention for the 50th celebration of Douge National School today? An evening of celebration and nostalgia will be held in the school this evening at 7pm and everyone is welcome. I'm sure that will be a lovely evening of celebrations. In relation to the riots, report the full story. You left out the child is 10 years old and the attacker was to be deported. Over 2,000 people can't all be thugs. We talked about that extensively yesterday during the newspaper review, and it's being carried as well on our news bulletins. Cost of living. I know you're speaking about the presidential election, but can I go off topic and say I was in a store yesterday. I purchased a Cadbury's Dairy Milk chocolate bar, ordinary 8-square bar. The person at the till said that's €2.25. I was shocked for a bar. They double checked and yes, the price was correct. I find that it's only until you're buying these items separately that you know notice how much the cost of them has increased. You know, if you throw it in with a few other items, you mightn't necessarily think that they're expensive. No mention of putting generators at phone masts, so the phones still work in a power failure in the report. People in Dublin don't have a clue about being without electricity or a phone for several days. In relation to the riots again, last night was a shocking exhibition of people shouting about our country being destroyed and then displaying the biggest attack on their own community. I'm all for peaceful protest, but that behaviour last night is an abhorrent attack on us all. In relation to the presidential election, good to hear a young panel on your show. I cannot in conscience vote for either of the two. I'm left with no choice but to spoil my vote to register my protest at the government for their trickery. They are both appalled at the loss of lives in Gaza, and rightly so, I am too. But both totally silent on the 60,000 plus babies legally murdered in our own country since protection for the unborn was removed from our constitution. Another listener says, is it the case that Heather Humphreys actually wants the role of president? Maria McGuinness was the front runner, but Fine Gael needed a new candidate. Maybe Heather just stepped up for the party but doesn't have the hunger for it. I won't be voting for either of the two candidates, but from what I seen last night, Catherine Conley uses her courtroom skills to avoid awkward questions around her past, whether it's the banking issue or association with dissident Republican group. Heather Humphreys is the only option for me, this listener says. These students you have on are zoomed in so far that they don't see their country being destroyed all around them. Many heroes of 1916, another listener says, and the War of Independence previously fought or worked for the British Army or civil service. So the reality of criticism of Catherine Conley's work as a barrister and for those she did not personally support, the parasite banks, is kind of pathetic, isn't it? Asked that listener. We all talk about inclusion. My vote will be Heather Humphreys. It's time the underrepresented in this county had a voice. As a Fianna Fáil voter, I can't bring myself to vote Heather Humphreys number one, another listener says. So I will be voting Jim Gavin number one and Heather Humphreys number two. I was asking earlier, did anybody watch the presidential debate last night and what their thoughts were on it. This listener says, yes, I watched the presidential debate. In my opinion, Catherine Conley represents Ireland and the Irish people, never interrupts the other speaker, sticks to her word, didn't sling any abuse at her opponent. I feel Heather, instead of answering any questions she was asked, tried to turn everything on Catherine, which didn't come across great. Apart from being very intelligent and easy to listen to, she is also willing to take a hand at everything, all sport, doing a bit of dancing and even the odd song. I know these things are not near the top of her presidential work, but I feel that it represents our Irish culture and why we are loved across the world. The government wouldn't let TDs and councillors vote in Maria Steen as a presidential candidate. How is this democratic? We vote in a government that won't allow our representatives to decide who we vote for. Finally, on the presidential election for now, I don't see how the result will make any difference to the people of Ireland. Michael D. Higgins voted in favour with the government on every occasion, and this president will be the same, believes that listener. If you have any other views on that, get in touch by calling 074-91-25000, texting or WhatsApping 086-6025000, or you can also email comments at highlandradio.com. Now, a missing person alert has been issued by police in Derry City and Strabane. They say they are concerned for missing person Seamus Quinn and are appealing to the public for your help to locate them. I'm joined now by Councillor Terry Crossan. Good morning to you, Councillor.
Good morning, how are you?
Good. So, Terry, you're a long-standing family friend of Seamus.
Yes, I have known Seamus since his childhood. I was very close friend of his father and his brothers and his mother and indeed all of the family. And I was very shocked to hear last night that Seamus had been missing since yesterday morning.
And what do we know about the last whereabouts of Seamus?
Well, he was last seen, I spoke just a wee while ago with his brother, and he was last seen leaving the area, in the general Ballyarnet area, yesterday morning. He drives a red Renault Kadjar, and the registration number is ZNZ7441. Seamus is about 5'8", he's approximately 63 years of age and has grey, short grey curly hair, you know. Now, his brother told me that they may have received a report that he was seen turning left towards the village of Huff and might be heading in that general and is shown their direction. So I would appeal, if anybody sees the car or sees Seamus, would they contact straight away and Garda?
Yeah, it's very important that people on both sides of the border keep an eye out. And just to remind people, it's believed Seamus was driving a red Renault Kadjar type vehicle with a partial registration number ending in 7441. And Terry, people can contact Gardaí, you mentioned there, and obviously police as well in the north.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if anyone sees Seamus anywhere, either north or south of the border, they should contact the authorities straight away without any hesitation, because it is vitally important that he is located as early as possible.
Councillor Terry Crossan, thank you very much for joining us to get that information out. And just a reminder, the alert that has been issued by police in Derry City in Strabane, they say they're concerned for missing person Seamus Quinn and are appealing to the public for your help. Seamus is described as a 63-year-old male with short grey hair. He is around 5'8", in height of a medium build, and may have been wearing glasses. His exact clothing is unknown, police say. However, he may be wearing grey and orange Brooks running shoes. And as mentioned as well, it's believed Seamus drives a red Renault Kadjar type vehicle with a partial registration number ending in 7441. And as Councillor Crossan was saying there, there has been a report that he may have been spotted in Inishowen. So anybody with any information is asked to contact Gardaí and police as well. I'm now joined by John Farn, who's the general manager of the Ballyliffin Golf Club. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, how are you?
Good. So I suppose we're talking in the context that a meeting of the Inishowen Municipal District backed a proposal for the development of an events and conference centre in Inishowen, and this was on the back of a presentation you delivered.
Yeah, it goes back to a feasibility study that the Inishowen councillors funded some years ago that was completed by a firm of consultants looking into the possible benefits of an event centre in Inishowen. And a 3,000-seater capacity event centre was proposed in that feasibility study, and it's seen as being a massive potential for the tourism industry and indeed the business community in Inishowen and beyond, in terms of a key piece of infrastructure that could lead to further and act as a catalyst for further development in Inishowen and beyond.
And has anything of this scale existed previously, or does it exist anywhere within Donegal at the moment?
Not in Donegal at the moment, and it wouldn't be competing with the likes of the Millennium Forum or indeed the Greenan Theatre. This is a much larger scale. It would be for concerts, large scale concerts, conventions, comedians, you know, anything that demands that size of an indoor event centre. For the region, so it would be a massive step forward. It is a big project. Mm-hmm. It's a 20 million euro plus investment, but it would bring with it the guaranteed income to the local economy of at least 8 to 10 million per annum, into the nighttime economy in particular. So hotels, restaurants, bars and visitor attractions would all benefit from, you know, the 80,000 minimum that would be attracted to this event centre on an annual basis.
Because you only have to look at even most recently the boxing event that took place at the weekend here in Letterkenny. You know, the far-reaching benefits of that economically was right across the border, people stopping for something to eat on the way to it. So you can only imagine, you know, that this would be replicated with this kind of facility.
Absolutely. There's a similar size facility in Castlebar. And, you know, in the course of the feasibility study, I met with them and discussed the impact this has on the local economy. And effectively, they maintain that this is like having a Connacht final anytime there's an event of this scale in Castlebar. So we're looking for a similar type event centre for Inishowen to attract that type of economic injection into the local economy. And to secure jobs in the tourism industry, but direct jobs as well in the convention centre or event centre. And it would be a multi-purpose facility, and that is key, so that it would attract, you know, a wide variety of large-scale audiences mm-hmm. to the region. And hopefully they come for a concert or they come for an event, and you know, they experience in Inishowen and Donegal, and they'll come back for other reasons, because you know, that's what we're about. We get them here once and they'll come back.
And there has been so many representations made that Inishowen is kind of out on its own in terms of promoting tourism and encouraging people to visit that part of the county, so this would be huge in addressing some of those concerns too.
It would, and you know, it should be viewed in tandem with, you know, the Wild Atlantic Way. You know, that has been a huge success, but unfortunately the success has been felt largely from Galway South. From Galway North, only 20% of the benefit has been felt, and it's infrastructure like this that will, you know, help and assist in developments such as those at Malin Head and Fort Dunree, to be anchor catalysts for tourism development on a long-term scale. And, you know, this is a joint venture. It would be seen as a joint venture between Donegal County Council and the local community. It would be a non-for-profit facility to benefit everyone. And it would be seen as, you know, something that could attract further investment in terms of hotels would be attracted to, you know, the audiences that are coming to these events. It would possibly justify commercial investment in hotels, restaurants, bars, and outlets such as that people coming to an area would expect.
And you mentioned that it would be in partnership with the council. Has the council agreed to fund this or consider streams of funding?
Well, that's what we're trying to get over the line here. There is a rural regeneration fund, and we feel this fits perfectly within that. You know, and it would be in partnership with the council that the project would go forward for rural regeneration funding. So the Donegal County Council will be an important partner in this, and you know, that's the crux of it. We need Donegal County Council to come on board in this. It is, you know, a big project, and it needs big thinking to get it over the line. But you know, we have evidence from Killarney with the ANEC there and in Castlebar on the dramatic economic impact this could have. And not alone in the direct investment that comes with it and the employment that comes with it, but this would really benefit the shoulder season and the winter months where, you know, these indoor events can go ahead, can sustain hotels staying open in the low season, can sustain restaurants, bars opening when they know people are going to be about attending events such as this.
Yeah, and that's what is vital, I suppose, to ensure, you know, the longevity of hospitality businesses. Maybe you've already mentioned it, John, but has a location been identified for this proposed centre?
Well, the original location was proposed for Carndonagh, but there's nothing set in stone. My priority is that this comes down to Sean because we get one shot at this, and I have no doubt it will happen at some stage within the county. And I would like to see Inishowen get the first shot at it because, you know, we badly need an investment of this scale to trigger the economic impact that it will bring.
And I presume all councillors within the MD were in favour of this, were they?
They were absolutely very positive feedback from the councillors. They do feel that it is something that could, you know, benefit Inishowen and Donegal long term, and they're going to put their best foot forward now and try and get it moved along with the rural regeneration team within the council to try and get it to stage one.
Great. John Farn, General Manager of the Ballyliffin Golf Club, thank you for joining us this morning. And exciting times ahead for Inishowen, and just to have such a facility of that scale will be massive for the area. And as John was saying there, you know, just the far-reaching benefits of it. I know I had mentioned that, I think, was it the Rumble in the Hills, the boxing event on Saturday, you know, seeing people from, you know, across people in Strabane were out dining because they were travelling on to the event. So it just shows how much of an economic benefit it, you know, things and events and, you know, this conference centre could be for the entire Northwest region. A couple more of your comments now. What is that Gert on about? We voted for councillors who decided not to nominate any candidate against the will of their constituents and based on dictators from party leaders. I am not represented by either of the candidates, which is bad enough, but the fact that alternative candidates were systematically blocked means that my vote has already been spoiled. On Friday, I'll let the cronies in charge know that. Glad to see Heather and Catherine are so obsessed by poverty in this country, especially in rural Ireland, probably because they've both never experienced it, says that listener. Another says, you're criticising those who are spoiling their votes, but those who are conservative have no one to vote for, as our candidate has been deliberately blocked and excluded. So now the only thing we can do is spoil our vote. I suppose the argument was that people are, you know, that's your argument in relation to why you would be spoiling your vote. But there are others who just decide that that's the way to go and, you know, maybe have no interest at all in the presidential election or any election, and they make that decision to do that. You're listening to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio this Wednesday morning. I'm joined by Damien Dowds, who is the editor of Rebuild at Donegal magazine. Good morning, Damien.
Hi, Michaela. How are you getting on?
Good, good. I was looking through this magazine and it really does do what it says it will. It supports homeowners facing the devastating impact of the defective concrete block crisis.
We've produced a 228 page magazine, I think it is, that's focused on the defective blocks crisis here, and it's kind of designed as a one-stop shop for any homeowner who knows that they have mica or think that they might have it, to try and help them get their kind of thoughts in order so that they can approach what is going to be a very difficult task of having to figure out how they're going to rebuild their homes and get on with their lives.
And did you see that there was room for this? There was a need for all this support and information to be in the one place?
I suppose my own home had mica, and you know, when we were looking at this back in 2020, and you're starting to kind of get your head around the idea when demolition is being recommended for you, you have a lot of things to try and think about. And I did go out and buy a number of magazines, like house magazines, and to try and get ideas for the design of the house, to try and get ideas for how you go about building the house. And there wasn't naturally at that time, a Donegal housing magazine or anything like it. So we had bought a number of magazines, had a look through those, flick through to try and get inspiration, try to get ideas, try to figure out what you need to do when it's ahead. So it'd have been great for me if there was a magazine like this on the market back when I was looking at it first. So it's kind of based on the experiences of, well, myself and others who've gone through the scheme. And there's a lot of articles in there too by professionals who've helped guide people through the demolition and rebuild or repair process that people have undergone. And we know, Michaela, it's only getting underway. The scheme is only a few hundred in it so far, and unfortunately, for thousands of listeners here today, this is around the corner for them. So this is a place for a magazine that they can read at their leisure, pick up a few bits and pieces from it, and start to get their heads around what's going to be a task that, in my case, took 5 years actually from the
Because
start.
I imagine navigating the scheme and the process, as you talked about there, deciding on different elements for the design of your new home, but that is so difficult, and I imagine it's so overwhelming that this magazine pinpoints different things to think of, to think about from roofs and your windows, which maybe people might think is a minor detail in the grand scheme of things.
And I suppose one of the early questions we had was, what form of construction would we use? I didn't build the house before. So I will admit, know very little about building. I know a wee bit more now, but you knew nothing at all about building. So, you're looking at, would we go and build with the cavity wall again, the block wall? Would you go and have a timber frame house, or would you do what we did actually and went with the insulated concrete form? So there was a lot of learning that had to be done, and you have a lot of things to try and consider, and it's just when you didn't build a house before, I never expected I'd be building a house. I never really intended. I just bought a house, and I thought when we bought back in 07 that, we'll buy another house sometime later, but that's kind of taken away from me. So you have to learn, and you have to learn kind of through the job. And I suppose what I found is that the competent building professionals, as they're called, but your engineers, your architects, your quantity surveyors, they can provide you with an awful lot of advice and an awful lot of know-how. But then ultimately, the decisions and what is done is with myself and with the person himself, the homeowner, the husband, wife, or the single person that has to go and sort their house out.
Yeah, it's just a huge amount of information to get through. But this magazine's good too because it has a directory in it. So somebody who is looking for a certain element, even I talked about the roofs and the windows, and kitchen designs, there's information there available at hand.
I suppose, look, there's a couple of steps that you have to take if you're going to engage with the mega scheme. Obviously, you have to make your applications and all that, but once you get your approvals and then, the confirmation comes through that you're going to be approved the scheme, you're going to be approved for demolition and rebuild, and some people are being approved for repair, whatever, externally for minor repairs or partial repairs. If you're dealing with, a full rebuild, you then will need to start thinking about, well, where am I going to get my architect? Where am I going to get my builder? Where can I get my electrician? Where can I get, So there's a lot of information and a lot of local tradespeople who are already engaged in the scheme with homeowners, or have advertised in there, and they're explaining the services and the trades that they offer. Because, I hired a contractor because I didn't know enough about it. But for people that are self-building, for example, that are going to do their own contract and are going to engage their own tradespeople, they'll be looking for the various tradespeople that they need, and a lot of those local tradespeople and local businesses have advertised in here and are explaining what services they offer. So it'll be very useful. Again, it's all gathered in the one place, and there's a directory there that people will be able to flick through, and there'll probably see half a dozen architects or more listed
Yeah, it's
within
at hand.
it. Exactly. So there's a lot of information because you have a lot of things to get your head around when you're doing it.
And it's very important too. There's different elements within it as well, discussing how you can get your children involved in this. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for the entire family.
Absolutely, I. So the there's advice there on engaging your children in, the redesign of what might become, their childhood, their teenage, and maybe even their adult bedrooms as well. Like, so it is, it's a thing that it encompasses the whole family. Like, that when you have to demolish and leave your house, you kind of have to have a think about how you're going to relay that information to the children, depending on their age. And then as you come through the rebuild process, you do engage them and you talk to them about their decoration, you talk to them about what they would like and different things like that. So there is all that kind of advice, and there's plenty of advice in there as well on how to navigate the bureaucracy of the scheme as well. Like, the scheme is famously bureaucratic, and there's advice in there on how to best deal with that as well.
And highlighting the mental health impact of this crisis is very important too.
Absolutely, yeah. There's been some good research done by the University of Ulster there. They've carried out surveys of people that are living in the defective homes, and they have found quite a lot of that. And that's the thing that everybody, I suppose, is, we've all learned, I suppose, as a society in general, that mind your mental health is very, very important. Like, so there we have an article in there based on some of the research done by the University of Ulster that's just advice for people that could be feeling a wee bit stressed, could be feeling a wee bit overwhelmed by the whole thing, that they need to take care of themselves as well, because the task in hand of going ahead to try and rebuild your house is quite a big one, and you need to be at fit for it, and you in the full of your
Yeah,
health when you're
I'd
taking it on,
imagine.
because it's a big task. Like, yeah.
And I think the magazine's great too. Whenever we're even publishing news articles relating to the defective block crisis, this is a nice bright, it's like a new beginning, this magazine. People can maybe look forward to the future.
Aye, and I suppose that is something that that we've experienced in our family. We've moved back into our home there over the summer, and haven't been in a defective home previous to it, and then moving into your home, like, this is the famous light at the end of the tunnel that is so hard to see when you're setting out on this, and actually you can't really see it because there's so many obstacles in the way that blocks out that light. But as you move through the building process, there is, decisions on what kind of counter worktop you're going to put in your kitchen. It's not the worst decision in the world that you'll ever have to make. Like, you're the biggest decision, like, but you're when you're starting to think about the house that you're going to live in, and you're trying as well. And I suppose that's one of the things that we're emphasizing in the book, like, as you're or in the magazine, is that you're trying to envisage about how you live today and how you might want and how you'll want to live in the future as well. So you're doing your best to, to future-proof your home.
Because obviously, so many homeowners have to unfortunately invest a lot of their own money. So it is important, as you said, to look towards the future.
Absolutely, yeah. And people going into the scheme are going to have to carry tens of thousands of euros of their own money just to keep the wheels kind of greased as it's going on. I suppose in our case, you're probably what it'll vary depending on the size of your build, but in our case, probably 10 to 15% of the overall cost of the build. We had to have our own money. We took our own borrowings to do that, so that we were able to progress through the scheme. Even as it stands at the minute, like, we're not fully out of the scheme. There's final payments to be drawn down, and there's we're patiently waiting on legislation going through the Oireachtas this autumn and into the new year, where the different grant rates that will be revised. Everyone at the moment is working off the 2023 grant rates, and the magazine it does reflect it. Like, this magazine reflects the grant scheme as it stands today, with the different caps and regulations and limits and the rules that are in place there, so it's, I suppose, it's dealing with the scheme as we find it today, rather than the scheme that you might wish it to be. So it's for that, like, and we just deal with the caps and the rates that are there. Like, but any homeowner that's in the scheme, or any homeowner that's getting ready to go on to it, like, they will know where they need to be advised that they're going to have to bring a proportion of the overall cost of the build of their own money with it, like.
And obviously, this has been a huge undertaking, publishing this magazine, but do you anticipate bringing out further editions?
It's possible, yeah. It's possible. Like, I suppose, the review of the scheme, would change a lot of the grants and the regulations and the conditions that are there. So a revised version of it will be. But, like, for the here and now, for today, this magazine assembles all that information in one place for the scheme as it stands. Like, and possibly in the future, yeah, there will be subsequent additions for it, because look, there's I think the official estimate is there's about 5,000 affected private homes. I've said it before on the 9 to Noon show, that's a vast underestimate. It's probably 4 or 5 times that. Could be 20,000 to 25,000 homes, or people listening today who are in homes that don't think they have defective blocks, but they very well may find that they have, like, you know. So there's going to be a lot of this for years to come, because it is going to take decades to repair and to rebuild all these houses, given the vast number of homes that are affected. So I'd expect there will be subsequent additions as the scheme goes through various iterations.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a great resource for defective block homeowners. Damien, where can people purchase this?
Yeah, the magazine retails at £5.95, and it's available actually in most outlets, most news agents and shops where you'd be picking up a local paper. Like, it's available in widely across the county. It's also available in some of in some outlets in Derry and Strabane and so on. Like, but no, it's widely available across the county. I'd say it's in 60 or 80 different outlets in all parts of the county, because while the mica problem was first identified and first spotted and then shown, this district here was the canary in the coal mine, like, you know, and as more has been learned about it, and the ripple of it has spread out, and we now know that it's more prevalent across the whole of the county. So the magazine is available
Right across.
throughout the county and in their neighbouring counties as well.
Great. Damien Dowd, editor of Rebuild at Donegal Magazine, thank you for joining us this morning. And as Damien said, that is available in stockists right across the county and across the border as well.
Highland Radio weather updates with McIlhenny's. Our Christmas shop has now opened for all your festive shopping needs. Explore our extensive range of decorations, bedding and more in our homeware department, in-store or shop online at McIlhenny's.com today.
Today's weather, a mix of scattered showers and sunny spells. Cloud with some outbreaks of rain will move up from the south towards nightfall, highest temperatures of 9 to 13 degrees. Now, in August past this year, Councillor Brian Carr and his wife Marie were enjoying a happy day out at Tremor Beach between Ardra and Nairn when disaster unfortunately struck. Yesterday, the young men, Matthew Clerkin, Dalta Bracken, Turlough McDade and Joe Heron, who saved the lives of him and his young son and niece after they were swept out to sea by a rip current, were honoured by Water Safety Ireland. I'm delighted now to be joined by Councillor Carr. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Michaela. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, and it's great to see you as well. I know we talked very briefly at the time of this incident. So I suppose, Councillor Carr, take us back to that day as much as I suppose you want to.
Yeah, as you said, it was the 15th of August and it was a lovely day. And we just, our son Ben, who's 9, and we picked up his cousin Amelia, 10, and we headed for... my wife Marie is from Rossbeg, so we headed out to Rossbeg, and just the kids normally just go to the beach in Rossbeg, which is beside Marie's home place, but we decided just for once we'd go to Tremor Beach. I haven't been there since I was a kid, and Marie hadn't been there in over 20 years, so we went to the beach. The kids headed for the water and Marie went down with them, and Marie, you know, from being beside the sea, she had known down through the years that Tremor, you know, it wasn't the safest place, so she was beside them. And I was up the beach as usual on my phone, and next thing I headed walking down towards the sea, which was a long distance out, and I was just admiring the vastness of the beach and how quiet it was, and taking a few photographs. And the next thing, the phone rang and reaches to me, the kids have just been swept away. Ben and Amelia have been swept out. So by the time I ran down and got out and into the water, when I was out as far as up to my neck, they were still 20, 30 metres further out. So I had to go off swimming, but the waves just kept putting me back. And they had, at this stage, gone out past the waves and they were bobbing in the water. Amelia had a small board with her and Ben was just treading water, and they were superb, I have to say. And I was shouting at them and talking, and they were asking, you know, save us, save me, Daddy, and help me, Brian, I can't hold on. And it was just tough, but I didn't panic, and I can
Yeah.
that's the one thing I can
Well, that's
remember.
so important to try and keep calm.
And eventually I went down to a star shape on my back because I was out of energy just to try and get some more energy. And then I could hear Ben saying, "Daddy, you're close to me now." So that made me go again. But it's just I just ran out of energy and I just couldn't keep going. And I remember saying to them, "Just whatever you see, you just keep going," because I knew I couldn't go anymore. And
Yeah.
just didn't, you know, so and just out of the corner of my eye, then I seen this surfer. And I just shouted, "Get the kids!" And then I was just, how can I say? I was finished. I couldn't give any more. And with that, someone grabbed my shirt, and I don't remember anything then. The next thing I remember was being dragged up the beach, and by four strong young men because I moved them all, and from then on, you know, they had the wherewithal to put me into the recovery position. They worked on me, and then a doctor came along, medics, and then I was airlifted to Letterkenny, and where I spent 12 days in Letterkenny and 3 in Galway. But you know, my wife Marie, who couldn't swim and hasn't, she was on the beach, and she was up to her chest, and she came back out, and she had the phones on the beach, and she was hoping they would work then, and so she had a real panic situation then, trying to ring the paramedics, and she was on the line for I think it was 7 minutes or something, trying to explain where she was, and then
And just seeing all the events unfolding, it must have been
she
so
could see
frightening for her.
everything. Yeah, and thankfully, you know, piecing it together afterwards with the lads, they were saying to us that the reason they were further up the beach, they were a couple of 100 meters away, but the reason they decided to head down is they seen the waves pick up.
Right.
So that's good. And they heard Marie screaming and shouting, and then they came over, and that's when they kicked into action. And they're the reason that I'm sitting here today talking to you. And, you know, as I said, I was struggling, and then Ben and Amelia were still there. And I don't know how long they would have been fit to continue, but
Yeah.
only for the lads were there. And as I keep saying, they were the right people in the right place at the right time because swimmers couldn't get in. But they had boards with them, which made the difference. They got out to us with the boards, because without the boards and without them and without the knowledge of the going around the current and all that,
It
so
was
everything.
amazing because they spoke to Greg on the show after it, and it was amazing, as you mentioned, the knowledge they had of the water and knowing exactly, you know, where to go in and where to let the current carry them. And I suppose that is something that, you know, even if the emergency services were on the scene, but they knew exactly the way the water worked in the area.
Yeah, and it was Joe Hearn, their uncle, that kind of took them down for surfing lessons, and it was him that recognised that, so he sent them out around, and that was the, you know, that was the big factor that they were able to go around and come across, and Matthew picked up Ben and Amelia, and I said again, Ben and Amelia were brilliant in the water, and then he spotted me and he pointed to Dultuk, and Dultuk came and got me then, and then Turlough came out and met his whole lot of us and took us all in, and thankfully yesterday we got a chance to, you know, to give, you know, to show our appreciation and to get them a bit of recognition and honour them for what they had done. As you said, the awards yesterday, the Irish Safety Water Safety Awards in Dublin yesterday, which was a great day,
I'm sure it
I
was
have to say.
emotional as well, was it, Brian?
It was a mixed day. It was emotional. It was joyful. We were full of pride looking up onto the stage. And, you know, it was happiness. It was just overall, it was a happy day. And like three nicer lads that was there. Joe, unfortunately, is living in the US.
Okay.
Three nicer lads you will never, ever meet in your life. Marie and I were joking coming home yesterday evening, if you could choose anyone to be saved by, you couldn't pick three nicer fellas.
Yeah.
They're a credit to themselves and their families, and you know, the schools and the communities. It's just we just can't express our enough gratitude and thanks to them for everything they've done for us.
Yeah, and the bravery of them themselves that day, as you said, going into the water. And I suppose, you know, anybody maybe in that situation would do all they could as well to help someone.
Yes, they thought about it for as they said and speaking to them, they thought about it just they planned and bang they went, and they never really thought for themselves. All they wanted to do was to get. They knew that we were so far out that if we didn't get help, that we were serious trouble, and they came out and they provided that help to us, and that's the reason that myself and Ben and Amelia are, and I'm going to have to say Marie too, because if they weren't there, Marie was going to try and do something to help as well. So Marie would have ended up going in, and it could have been a only
Very
for
different
them. It could have
situation.
been a serious day, and you know. So we got them the awards, and I have to thank Kevin McCloskey and Jocelyn Cunningham. And Kevin received a 40-year award yesterday for volunteering with the water safety as well. So it was a good day all around.
Yeah. Well, Councillor Brian Carr, thank you so much for joining us. And I saw a picture of you up at a recent meeting or event, so it's great to see you back out. Thank you so much, and it was great to be able to honour the four involved yesterday. Thank you so much.
Michaela, thank you very much. Thank you. And see you at a meeting shortly.
Yeah, that is Councillor Brian Carr there. And as mentioned, Matthew Clerkin, Dalton Bracken, Turlough McDade and Joe Hearn were honoured by Water Safety Ireland yesterday. There was a few others from Donegal, Kieran Mulro, Pete Mason, Igor Birkin, and as well, the four that we had just mentioned there. So they're all honoured for their help in rescuing people from the water, and it's great to, I suppose, honour them and their efforts and show how important water safety is.